Good afternoon, good morning to our members and viewers worldwide. My name is David Kwan, and I'm delighted to be able to host Joe Wicks, aka The Body Coach. Joe, welcome, and thank you very much for joining us at the Cambridge Union.
Hello, David. Thank you for having me. It's an absolute honour to be invited to speak at the Cambridge Union. I wish I was there in person, maybe in the future, but thanks for having me, and I look forward to having a chat with you guys.
Absolutely. Great to hear, Joe. So I will just introduce you according to our procedures, though I'm sure that most would already know you. It's just so that all our audiences can have like a brief overview. Joe Wicks, the body coach, is best known for his Lean In 15 meal plans and workout videos. Since the first national lockdown in March, he started the popular PE with Joe workouts. And here are some extraordinary numbers to capture Joe's impacts. 115 live workouts, 100 million views in total, one Guinness World Record for most attended live workout with 955,185 views, 610,000 pounds raised for the NHS and BBC Children in Need, and of course, Joe has helped millions of school children and families during these most challenging times to not only survive, but actually become fitter, healthier and stronger. Joe, welcome again. And given that PE with Joe officially finished last Friday with schools reopening, your achievements during lockdown seem to be the natural starting point for our discussion. When you look back on the past 12 months, what have you done and what are you most proud of?
Well, thank you for that introduction. And all those facts are correct. And it blows my mind hearing them back and those numbers and the scale of just how much that, how many people it reached, you know, and I had no idea. I started it March 23rd last year. So we've nearly done it for a whole year. And I had the idea of just sharing a live workout every day, Monday to Friday at 9 a.m. on my YouTube channel. And I called it PE with Joe because I knew that schools were closed. So it's really in my head aimed at just kids of the UK that couldn't be in school and exercising. So I thought it'd be great for parents to get involved in. What I didn't realize was millions of people around the world were going to take part. And it is my greatest achievement. You know, it's my proudest achievement because I really brought families together and got them exercising together for the first time and got them through a difficult and emotional time by just having fun. You know, exercise is a really powerful tool to change the way we feel. So it was silly, had music and quizzes and Fancy Dress Friday. I really made it interactive so that even if you weren't that into exercise, you might enjoy the quiz or the spot the difference and all these things. So yeah, it's amazing. I never realized it was going to go on for so long, but it's finished, officially over, because obviously children are back at school on Monday this week. And I miss it though. You know, I miss that that purpose and drive and connection that I had with people. So I always feel a little bit flat when it comes to an end.
Oh, absolutely. It's been very meaningful. And I think we've all very much enjoyed following along. So let's bring it back to, you know, March or February 2020, when the outbreak first began. What was going through your head and when did you realise that you had an opportunity to make such a big difference?
So it looks like it was like an overnight success and this idea that came out of nowhere. But I had been working on this for about 4 years. So I'd been all over the UK doing schools tours, Ireland, Northern Ireland. I literally went to about 50 schools and did live workouts. So I was testing this theory and philosophy around short, interactive, fun workouts for children to inspire them to get into exercise. And to be honest, I dreamed and I had a vision that I was going to do exactly what I did. I just thought it was going to take 10 or 15 years of like campaigning and documentaries and government initiatives. But I had that impact almost overnight with YouTube. And so it's like, it looks like it was this thing that just came out of nowhere, but I'd really been working. I'd built that trust and that, you know, that kind of passion was there. So when schools knew it was live, they shared it on their newsletters. People were tweeting it. The media backed it and, you know, really supported me to get the message out there. And I just can't believe even now when you say that 100 million people took part. I mean, that's mind-blowing. I could never have imagined that. I could never have predicted it or even expected it. And, you know, like you said, you're in Australia and you found out about it. And there was people in India, in South America, and like all over Asia that were taking part. So I'm really glad I stuck to it and kept it on YouTube and made it really accessible. And I'm glad that I was there for people, yeah, for a really difficult time.
Absolutely. So if you've been preparing for 4 years on this idea of the live workout, on that night of March 23rd, when you first went live with the whole country watching, did those exercises still feel the same? Like, did you have an extra burden or pressure on you?
Well, it was a morning and I woke up and I was like, I had no idea how many were going to be live when I turned it on. You know, I would have been like happy with 10,000 live streams. Bang, before I even went live, it was like 360,000 people are waiting, and it grew and grew, and it got to like 850,000 for the first day. And I was like, this is like stepping in front of a TV audience. Like, this is huge. And so I was really nervous. I was a little bit kind of like my throat was a bit dry, and I was like, my heart was pounding. But once I settled into it, it's just what I love doing. I love exercise and I love having fun and being silly with it. So yeah, it was nerve wracking to start with, but I really settled into it and I loved it. It was my therapy too. Like, I had days where I didn't want to wake up and do anything. I didn't want to exercise. But by doing it, you know, I went on that journey and I felt better at the end of it. So it gave me structure and also gave parents and families like a start to their day, which was active, which was enjoyable. And it set them up for a day of, you know, homeschooling and whatever they were doing at home.
Yeah, well, your passion was definitely very visible, Joe. But given like the nature of the lockdown at the time, with the stress, uncertainty, unemployment, social distancing, crowded conditions, could you tell us why your kind of high intensity interval training or HIIT workouts were so fitting for everyone to be accessible during those circumstances?
I've always believed in, you know, time is so important. Even when it comes to my nutrition advice and my food and my cooking, it's always about quick, simple food. And it's the same with exercise. The less friction and resistance you have to like getting it done, the better. So if you can convince someone, you know, you can do a 20-minute workout and feel energized and feel happier and feel more focused and productive. Like, if you can convince them that this can help you feel better, you know, it might not transform your body overnight. It might take longer, but it's about the physical and the mental health benefits of exercise. So HIIT training is just quick, no equipment. You can do it in your bedroom. You can do it in your living room. You could do it in a tiny little room wherever you are in the world, like a hotel room. And so that's the accessibility part, I think. You know, there's no equipment. And you can have an amazing workout, you know, doing burpees and lunge jumps and mountain climbers, you can get really out of breath and you can feel great. So that's my methodology. But I don't think you should smash HIIT, you know, 5-6 days a week. It's always good to slow things down, have a yoga session or go for a walk, something a bit more low intensity. But for the general population who want to get fit, HIIT training is really good for that.
Yeah, well, it definitely sounds very convenient. So correct me if I'm wrong, Joe, but your lessons started at 9 a.m. Every weekday?
That's it.
So even though it started at that time, you would have had to do like preparation work beforehand. Would you be able to walk us through, like, logistically or mentally, what did you do to get ready?
Well, it's quite easy because I had all my camera and my lights up. So I just had my camera, you know, I charged my batteries, got it all lit up. But I was really on my own, so there was no one with me. So just by chance, a few weeks before that, I'd had lights installed in my living room. And only because I was starting to film workouts for my app, I didn't know I was going to be doing this with Joe, but luckily I was all set up so I could just go in there, turn the lights on, and I had my tripod, my camera on there, and I'd have a whiteboard just in front of the camera with the exercise written down and a few pointers and things, and that was it. Really simple. I just pressed live. I streamed it through something called Blackmagic Web Presenter, which kind of streamed it through to YouTube, and once I was doing it, I was self-sufficient. I knew what I was doing. I would just be on there every day, you know, editing. Well, I didn't even need to edit it because once it's live, it finishes and it uploads to the YouTube channel. So the majority of the views were not live, you know. So most times it would be like, say, 500,000 people doing it live. And by the end of that 24-hour period, you'd have like 5 or 6 million views. So a lot of people in Australia and New Zealand were catching up in the afternoon, or Dubai, they were doing it at a later time. And that was it. Whatever I was feeling, however stressed I was, or if I was just in a bad mood, I just shook it off and I just stand in front of that camera and I delivered a safe, fun, exciting workout that people could come away from feeling good. And that really was my motivation behind it. It was about their mental health. It wasn't like, let's save the world from obesity and diabetes. It was really, let's just make people feel good and have fun.
And I think you've accomplished that, Joe. I'm already getting messages from our current student who said the impact that you have had on them during the lockdown period. So in those live sessions, how much of it was improvisation?
Well, I mean, I always obviously write the workout down, but sometimes if a good song came on, I'd be like, right, it's Silly Billy time, and that's the dance. So Silly Billy is the 35-second dance where you just go bonkers and just run around, roll about, whatever you want to do, just dance, body pop, like break dance. And it's really fun. And it's little moments like where I quite improvised. I mean, but I didn't plan on A, headbutting the ceiling, B, trying to do the splits when I was dressed as Buzz Lightyear, and C, I'm sure you're going to ask me about Fartgate. I let one rip by accident just before I went live. It went all around the world. Australian TV picked it up. I didn't know I was live. I just had to let one rip. And, you know, all these things really made people laugh, just made it fun. And I didn't plan on it, but it was really hilarious when it happened. And I owned it. I said, look, guilty as charged. Sue me, Your Honor.
That was really funny at the time. I do remember that. So, Joe, you are like the body coach, but the body coach is also like this empire and this brand, this fitness brand. So do you have a team working for you behind the scenes? And if so, would you be able to share some anecdotes on, you know, kind of some highlights of your team during the pandemic period?
Yeah, I mean, you may think like I've got this massive company behind me, and it's really much smaller than you might think. So it's me and my brother, Nicky. You know, Nicky's my, like, if I'm the face and the energy and the kind of spark and the sunshine of the body coach, he's like the brains and the creative. He's so strategic, like he's amazing. And I wouldn't be as successful as I am without Nicky. So he's really been fundamental in content strategies and creating the app and overseeing the operations of that. It's amazing what he's done. So yeah, a lot of respect for my brother, Nicky, who we work so hard together. Then I've got my best friend, Dom, who does all my editing and kind of uploads videos and sort of head of content. Then my little cousin, Luca, is my social media community manager. So that's three of us that are pretty much family already. And then I've got about 12 members of the support team who are there to kind of coach people through the plan. So they're like live chat and email support coaches. But recently, more than ever, like, we've actually got an agency. We don't have an in-house tech team, but we've got an agency in the UK building our app. And it's amazing, but it's a huge team. It's very expensive. It's an amazing product that we created, but we're trying to bring that in-house. We're trying to hire a CTO and get like our own tech in-house team so that we can build long-term and scale without having to, you know, have agency. But it's amazing. Like, it's a, you know, we service hundreds of thousands of people a month through this subscription model now. So it's completely changed. It used to be a PDF. It was very analog. It was like, you know, get an email and it'd be a PDF that you open up. It was a good product, but the user experience wasn't great. Now with this app, it's completely changed everything. And I'm now running a tech company, which I wasn't prepared for. I didn't realize how involved it would be, you know, and I've had conversations with Andy Puddicombe from Headspace. Like, it grows, it becomes this huge thing. Like, you don't plan on it, you just want to share your content, and it just grows into this big thing. So we're in the process now of kind of building the team and looking at what's that going to look like. And as long as I bring in smart people that are really amazing and passionate, I think we're going to do okay.
That's exciting. We will talk about your app a bit later down the track, but for now, Joe, in terms of your team, do you guys work at home nowadays with the lockdown?
We used to have an office in Richmond, like, and it was like a really fun office. We had a gym, you know, we had lunch club. It was really, I loved it. I loved the culture that I created. And obviously lockdown happened. We hung onto the office as long as we could, but we realized like, we can't maintain this anymore. We can't sustain this overheads for no reason when we're all working from home. So at the moment there's no office. We're all working from home. We obviously have Zoom catch ups, and I try and keep the bond. You know, I provide them with fitness equipment, and I, you know, we send like lunch, we do like supper clubs, we send like, you know, pizza or pasta making kits, and we kind of have interactive sessions and stuff. But it's hard, you know, we're a really young like group of people that want to be together, and it's hard to be creative and have really good idea sessions over Zoom, isn't it? I mean, it's just not the same. So I'm sure in the future we'll have an office or a HQ which will be half tech, half support coaches, and maybe we'll have a rolling kind of, you know, rota where we can pop in and out. I can't see us ever being in an office 5 days a week together again.
Yep, fair enough. So, you know, at what point did you decide to donate the money to the NHS? And was that like a personal decision or like a team decision? Like, did you have a family conversation, for example?
Well, YouTube's never been a massive revenue stream for me. As I said, it was like, my business really is my online plan and my books and things and whatever. But I just saw the numbers, kind of said to my brother, like, this, I don't want people to think that I did this to capitalize and profit. And the YouTube views were like 6-7 million views a video. That generates a lot of AdSense from Google. So we made a decision. Like, the NHS was obviously struggling. They were the key workers that were working really hard. And there was a charity called NHS Charities Together, which is a charity that essentially like distributes it to people in need within the NHS system. And that could have been laptops or iPads for people that need support or, you know, travel or health. It was all different kind of things. I'll never really know where the money went, but I'm really proud that I raised £580,000 for that charity at the time. And yeah, it was just a decision that felt right. I didn't want to take that money. It wasn't about money for me. And it felt good because I kept saying to people, look, the more views we get, the more money we get off Google, the more money we give to the NHS. So it was a nice way of raising money, and people felt they were part of something.
Yeah, the impacts would have been unquantifiable, Joe. So what was your best kind of like most memorable or most meaningful achievement or compliment you received during that time?
Well, I was kind of so busy and distracted from the moment it started. I went for 18 weeks without a break, without even coming up for air. And then when it stopped, I went to the office in Richmond and there was about 2,000 or 3,000 letters and cards and pictures and presents. And I sat there one day on my own. It took me 2 days to go through it all. And I just like burst into tears because I had this wave of gratitude from around the world, right? So like real gratitude from people that were suffering with their mental health on a really deep level. And I realized what I'd done at that moment, that it wasn't just views and like kids bouncing around dressed as bunny rabbits and Buzz Lightyear. Like this was adults and people that were lonely, truly lonely on their own, and were doing it like every day, and they were doing it with their family through Zoom. And it was a really emotional moment because I realized what I'd done, and then I realized how much I missed it. And then I was just really emotional for about a month afterwards. Then I got back into it and obviously reconnect with my audience. But I really need that connection. I need to feel that. Because otherwise, I'm just standing. Like, I've been filming this week in my live bedroom, and if it's just YouTube and like content, if I don't feel the impact it has, I lose motivation. So every day, I read DMs, I send voice notes back to people, and that keeps me close to my mission, my purpose, and it really fires me up for more and keeps me coming back.
It's incredible how you still connect with people, even though you will get countless messages. And I particularly like the point you talked about being emotional. And it kind of relates to, you know, what we admire about you, which is how you're so courageous enough to be so open and vulnerable. Like we would see you being out of breath or talking about the mistakes that you have made. But Joe, what gave you that courage to share your flaws so openly to millions of people? And do you think everyone should be more open to show their more human side?
For me, it's not like a conscious thing. I'm not forcing it. You know, it's like, well, I forced that fart out that day. But that was, even so, they always say it's better out than in, is it? And it's the same with emotions. I feel like when we watch a funny film, we laugh, you let it out and you feel great. And sometimes we feel emotional and you want to cry and you sort of, it comes up and you push it down and you force that energy back into your body. And I've got no shame in crying on an Instagram live, crying on a TV, you know, an interview on TV, or crying in front of thousands of people at a book signing. If I feel super proud or emotional or like a moment of gratitude, I really think it's important to let that out and experience that moment of either joy or upset or whatever it may be, that feeling of, you know, being lost or confused. I just think the more we can communicate, the better. And when Boris announced, you know, the third lockdown, I just felt really emotional, like for all the families that are struggling, all the kids that aren't getting fed that great, or that, you know, they can't afford the heating on and they're not at school getting that school meal. All these things came because I was a kid, grew up on a council estate. We didn't have nice, luxurious food. We always had our dressing gowns house because it was just freezing. We always wrapped up in coats. And I had this moment of empathy for families and stuff. So it really hit me. I let it out. And it was probably the most powerful thing I've done all year, because it meant thousands of people felt like they could show emotion. And they were messaging me saying, look, thank you for being so open. And you're the body coach and you're also vulnerable and you're human. And it made people really open up. So yeah, I think communication is so important more than ever right now during this lockdown.
So is there something people still misunderstand about you?
Well, I suppose people assume that I'm always happy. I'm always patient with my kids. I'm always like buzzing and motivated, but I'm not. Sometimes I'm impatient. Sometimes I'm snappy. And sometimes I wake up and I do not want to film. I don't want to perform. And I just want to go around the shop. And I did it today. I went around the shop today and bought loads of cookies and crisps and cakes from the bakery, because my day didn't go well. And I just thought, I'm just going to go and eat, you know. And I have those days, but I also share. I'm not like hiding it. I'm like, look, I've had an emotional day. I'm stress eating, whatever. In the morning, I'll get up and do a hit session. I'm back. So I think it's important that people know that I'm not always Mr. Motivator. I think it's more discipline. I've got discipline and habits that allow me to stay up and keep my energy up. But, you know, I've got a 2-year-old kid and a 1-year-old kid, and I don't sleep sometimes. And I wake up and I'm like, I'm not the body coach. I'm half the man. I'm like half the shadow of myself. And that's good to share those moments, because people realize, actually, you know what? He's going through what I'm going through, and fair play, he's exercising, so I might go and do a workout. So I'm always trying to use my life and my experience to create an impact and maybe an action from somebody else who might also be feeling a little bit crap.
Yeah, that difference between perception and reality is fascinating. And you know, you talk about being half man, half body coach. You're also like a combination of a reality TV star and educator, author, presenter, superstar athlete. How do you think the children and adults see you?
You're very complimentary. I wouldn't call myself a superstar athlete. I wish I was an athlete. How do I think children see me, did you say? Well, there's really been a shift. Like before lockdown, it was just adults would say, "Hey, Joe, like, I'm on your 90-day plan," or "I love your cookbooks. Thank you so much." But now it's really shifted. It's just kids, kids, kids. So when I'm out, they're like, "Mr. Wicks, P with Joe, and do the silly Billy and all that. Do the lean back." And it's fun. I love it. And I really love meeting people in real life. Obviously, we can't hug. We can't have selfies. It's a bit like distancing. So it's that thing of, I can't wait till like we can be more interactive and have like live events and actually meet children and go back to the school. So I do love that. I think they just see me as a bit of a nutter, a bit of a plonker, you know, a bit silly. Like, but I hope that when they look back, when they're older, if I was the first ever like trainer on their screens, that they have good memories and it was fun, and they see it as a positive thing. They remember me from the lockdown. They remember, "Oh, do you remember PE with Joe?" I really hope that they have fond memories of it. And I think because I made it really fun, you know, I did all the fancy dress. Every week I dressed up in some different character, and that made adults laugh. It made kids laugh. And yeah, they're good memories. They're really good memories for everybody.
So remember in March when you were admitted in hospital for hand surgery and you had a substitute teacher called Rosie, who happens to be your wife. Did Rosie volunteer to take over and demonstrate the moves, or did you need to persuade her?
Your facts are amazing. You're like a detective. You've got every stat immaculate. It's remarkable. Most journalists I ever speak to like get my name wrong. They call me from Essex. You've nailed everything. So basically, so this is the story. I announced I was going to do PE with John Thursday night. Saturday morning, I went out on my motorbike and I crashed my motorbike into a brick wall and I broke my hand. So I've got these little marks here. Wasn't happy with myself, really upset that I broke my hand 2 days before I'm about to start this PE workout. So it was cast up, you know, I was doing my workouts. It was painful, but I cracked on. Then halfway through, I got an infection. My hand, honestly, it was like bulging out here. All the pressure, like the wires were infected. My hand was trying to explode. So I went back in. Luckily, it was on Friday evening. As soon as I finished it Friday morning, I went down to the hospital, bursting into tears. I was like, "Please help me." They stuck me on a, you know, liquid paracetamol and codeine and morphine, all sorts. I was buzzing and I was like, "I'm in so much pain." And then I rung Rosie. I said, "Rosie, I'm in here for a while. Like, I can't not be here on Friday, Monday morning. I need to do PE with Joe." She said, "Well, why don't I dress up as a teaching assistant and you can be the teacher?" So Rosie got in her little kit and, you know, I was there with my shirt and tie, my clipboard, and I basically talked everyone through the workout, and Rosie demonstrated the exercise, and that was so out of her comfort zone. I mean, there was like almost a million people tuned in, and she really stood up, and she knew how important it was to me, but also to everybody else. And you know, I love her for that. She really stepped up.
That sounds amazing. What a great story to remember. So what kind of role has Rosie and your daughter Indy and Sam Marley had during, you know, the PE with Joe? Like, did they give you that inspiration or give you any ideas?
Well, Rosie, you know, was so amazing. My brother Nicky was on every single workout. So every single one of those workouts for 18 weeks, Nicky was in my earpiece, you know, doing the shout outs from around the world. So he was essential and fundamental. Oh, look at this. What's that? Is that a That's scary.
So I was wondering, you know, you talked about Fancy Dress Friday. Who gave you the idea or the courage to dress up in front of millions of people?
I just don't know, Eric. I just thought it'd be fun. And, you know, Indy and Marley gate crashed all the time. And now, like, she knows it's going to be Friday. So when she calls it Fancy Dress Friday, she says, "Can I dress up?" You know, so she's got her own outfits. And it was chaos. You know, Rosie was there supporting me, like keeping the kids quiet some days so I could actually do it. Other days I said, just let them in, open the door. And they were the kind of funny moments where we all just had a boogie and, you know, made mess and squished berries in the carpet. But it was just like entertainment. It really became a sketch show in some respects because it was absolute chaos. But the Fancy Dress Friday thing, once I started it, I thought, I've got to keep going. You wouldn't believe how much it cost me. Every week, £50 a week, I was doing a new costume every week. And I've got literally about 40 or 50 Fancy Dress Friday outfits in my garage. I mean, I've got literally like, I could have the best house party. I could have the best Fancy Dress party ever if I could have a party.
Well, I had to think long and hard about how to dress up. So how did you come up with ideas every week? Did Indy and Marley feed you with any inspiration?
Yeah, I mean, they asked me about, you know, dress up as like, you know, Moana, or dress up as Buzz and Woody and animals. And then obviously the comments, I'd say to people, what should I dress up next week as? The funniest one was recently I dressed as a whoopee cushion. So obviously the Fartgate happened and I was like, right, I'm gonna own this and run with it and just milk it for everything it's worth. And I dressed up as a massive giant whoopee cushion. Do you know what a whoopee cushion is?
Go on. So,
do you know what they are, whoopee cushion?
I personally don't, but go on.
So a whoopee cushion, you know, like it's like a balloon and you blow it up and you sit on it and it makes a fart noise.
Oh, of course. Yep, of course.
Yeah,
yep,
so
yep.
It's a whoopee cushion. So I was dressed as a giant whoopee cushion, just in playing in theme of the Fartgate and the Windy Wicks. So that was quite funny. But yeah, I ran out of ideas. I've done every Marvel character. I've done every Disney character, every animal, every vegetable. I really ran out of steam at the end.
So you've been like this role model with kids and, you know, kids look forward to every Friday and seeing how you're dressed up. Do you think those ideas also came from your own childhood? Like you mentioned how you were a bit of a class clown, and has that experience given you the empathy, for example, to resonate with children and to think about what they want and what inspires them?
Yeah, I was a loose cannon when I was younger. I was very distracted. I couldn't focus on anything. But I loved sport. I loved activity and exercise. So I always knew I was going to be do something in fitness or health. And I actually wanted to become a PE teacher. That was my dream. But what I realized is kids just need to be distracted. They need to have fun. So the Spot the Differences added an element to certain children that might have had, you know, learning difficulties or autism. Like it helped them like visualize on things. And then the fan stress was like, it's stimulating again. Like, what's he going to be? He's a panda. Oh my God, like he's a big banana, he's a pumpkin. Like it made it visual for certain people. And then obviously the music helped. Like when the music was on, I had much more energy because I had some days you just don't want to do it. And the music picked me up and I would, you know, just go bonkers and do roly-polies and try and do the splits. And I'm just silly. Like I'm just myself. But I realized in those moments where I was truly being like authentically stupid and fun and just having fun, I felt my happiest. I felt my happiest because it's that playfulness and that childlike thing that we sort of lose that, don't we? We disconnect from that. But to see adults dressed up, you know, and I had adults with no kids dressed up every week doing it, Fancy Dress Friday and having a boogie. And they said to me, like, it was the best thing they could do. It really gave them structure to their week.
I think you hit something very special, Joe, and that is kids often don't learn from people who they don't like, and learning is a very interactive process. What advice would you give to parents, teachers, youth leaders, coaches alike to ensure that children are engaged and that they're learning?
I think communicating and trying to, sometimes we try and like talk down to kids, you know, like talk to them like they're little toddlers. And I think generally people like to be spoken like little adults, like whether they're 5 or they're 10 or 15. It's just about just listening, being understanding and, you know, remembering that you were a teenager and you were emotional and, you know, irrational. I was so irrational as a kid. And so I just try and, always, and when I'm doing my narration and my commentaries through the workouts, it's never about body image. It's never about fat loss. It's about how you're going to feel. Like you might feel really low and stressed and frustrated now, but I promise you, if you do this workout, come on the journey, by the end of it, you know, I call it Captain Serotonin at the end, where you just feel good. Like, and it might only be a temporary thing, but you always feel better. So it's very much about do it to feel good, do it for your energy. Come on, let's have fun. Let's be silly. Let's give each other high fives. And that made it feel like it wasn't like a fitness test. It was more like have fun, get sweaty, bounce around, you know, watch your mum and laugh at your mum and dad. And that was the gift of Pee with Joe. It was just fun. It was silly and fun.
I love how you talk about the energy and high fives. And I'm actually a youth basketball coach and done my fair share of mentoring, volunteering with children. And what kind of role do you think encouragements or cheering play for a kid's childhood growing up in terms of their character shaping process, whether they're playing like a team sport or an individual endeavor?
Oh, it's massive. I mean, I if Indy like says a new word, I scream. If she like, you know, if she like sounds at her name or writes a letter, really, I just go bonkers. I just celebrate. I like, darling, it's amazing. Well done. And she gets like lit up from it. She gets so gassed when I talk about things in that way and I get her excited. And it's the same with like Marl. If I give him the ball and he kicks it, I cheer like he's just scored a goal for like World Cup final. Like, and that really makes like learning fun. It makes cooking fun. It makes fitness fun. So yeah, you know, kids, there's so much pressure with kids and like parents for children to be super like elite athletes and performance based markers. But if your kid's miserable and they're not happy and enjoying it, you know, what's the point of it? So I think always support them and love them, encourage them, but let them know it's like, okay, It's okay, like, if you don't have the best day or you don't do everything perfect, you're still going to try and still have another go, and you get better if you keep coming back to it.
Hmm. So how does that learning from sport or exercise or from playing translate into other aspects like business or, you know, coaching, for example?
I think everything I learned through sport and exercise and, you know, dealing with stress, like, I think that when I have stressful days and I exercise, I feel way more in control. I make better decisions, you know, I'm kinder to people, I'm more understanding, and I'm also more patient. That's so important, I think, with kids as well, you know. And then when it comes to a work environment, I think real high performers and, you know, amazing entrepreneurs that you might think of, you know, most of them have a really incredible fitness regime where they've just got the structured, they exercise, they know the secret to success is good sleep and exercise. And so it can translate into so many things, your relationships with people you work with, your partners. And so exercise is not something that's optional. It's essential for a healthy mind and body, and it really accelerates things in your life. I think you make better decisions. You're more, you can deal with stress better. You know, you can focus better. It's just amazing. I love all the benefits of exercise that you can't see, right? Not the physical change or the abs or the muscles or the body fat you lose. It's like the things you cannot see. That's what's going to truly change your life and motivate you.
So with that insight and belief, if you were the school principal of Blenheim High School, for example, the high school you went to, how would you run the show? How would you integrate those ideas into tangible things that teachers, educators, and children can do during the day?
Are you like a criminal? Are you a detective? Are you like a criminal? You've got every fine detail. Can't believe it. I was so impressed. I've forgotten the question. What was the question?
So if you were the school principal of a high school or primary school, how would you kind of integrate your insights and passion for exercise so that all children can benefit?
I'd probably be like a Miss Trunchbull in Matilda. I'd be really hardcore. I'd shot put the kids out the window. No, I'd just be me, and I'd be like, right, kids, we're going to start our day with exercise. It's 15 minutes. I don't care what's going on at home. Leave it behind you. Let's just lift our spirit. Let's lift our energy and our mood and get focused for the day ahead of learning, of being kind, of being patient with each other. And that would transform that school. Then I'd go, right, let's go and do it to another school. And I'd just jump from school to school, transforming them emotionally and physically and mentally through a healthy, you know, routine with fitness. And it doesn't take loads of equipment and fancy, you know, loads of space and even like loads of money. Like exercise, like PE with Joe was completely free. Imagine if every day, academic school day started with a 15-minute workout. Think what that would do for the children and their mindset and their health. It would be amazing. So I would just do that. I'd just turn them all into little mini body coaches.
Mm. I find it fascinating how so many people kind of see things as a zero-sum game, meaning like they see the 15-minute for exercise is 15 minutes lost for study, for example. But you talked about, you know, if you actually exercise, you become more efficient, you become happier, and you actually learn a lot better. So if you were the next Minister of Education, taking on that more holistic policy side of things, how would you integrate that into the curriculum? So you're not there in an assembly or in the classroom to lead the sessions by yourself, but you're the Minister of Education.
Well, that's a big one. Well, what I love about what I've done and what I do every day is I feel the impact, you know, like I have impact on people in real time, and I see it and I read it and I absorb it and I love it. So that motivates me. I had an opportunity to go down the government policy kind of, you know, working with the government and like doing initiatives around health and fitness. But something in my gut said to me, this is going to dishearten you, because like anything, it could take years to get things approved and move through, and it may never happen and you get knocked back. And I didn't want to feel that feeling. I just want to just keep doing what I'm doing. And like I say, shine my sunshine on people and try and impact when I'm alive right now, when I can in real time. But I would, you know, I don't think the word enforcing exercise, but making it more accessible, making it more encouraged, that like schools, the pressure on schools comes from, you know, Ofsted and the academic pressure of children, right? You know, to get the A to C grades in like academic subjects. But my argument is, what good are those grades to your child if your child is overweight, has bad mental health, has been bullied through school, is depressed, is can't focus, isn't happy? Like, so for me, like the first thing should be exercise and fitness and their mental health, and everything else will come off the back of it. And that's the thing that I think we kind of forget about. It's always so much pressure on the maths, English and science, but what good is that if you're not happy, right? And if you're not healthy. So I would just make it, I'd encourage families and schools to exercise together every day.
Are there any exceptions? So hypothetically, say someone has a life-defining exam in 2 days' time. Should they spend that time revising and reading through their notes, or should they be exercising or doing both?
I mean, you need to do both, obviously. Like, you need to cram as much in. I was a crammer. I was so bad. I'd do all my learning about 24 hours before the exam. Like, I just couldn't, I could never seem to, no matter how long I had, I'd always be doing coursework. Now, even at uni, I used to sprint to the box where you put your coursework in just before it shut. They'd have a lock on it, and I'd always be doing it. I never learned. That was just the style of learning I did, but I still always exercise for university. And I think when you're feeling that stress and that pressure of like exams or coursework coming up, you have to disconnect, do 15 minutes of exercise or go for a walk, get half an hour fresh air. That's going to help you retain the information more when you come back to it, I think, 100%.
That is interesting. I'm actually surprised by that, because I read somewhere that you used to vacuum your room like 4 times a day or something. So shouldn't that have given you like organisational skills to get things done ASAP?
Well, yeah, my mum had OCD, so she would like be cleaning all the time, scrubbing the house up and down, like spring cleaning, like 7 days a week. And I would have to be like hoovering and doing my bed and all this stuff. And that was, I didn't like that at the time. I hated it, but it did teach a lot. You know, I learned to look after myself and to be independent when I traveled. When I lived in uni, I didn't live in uni halls, so, but when I traveled and lived in like hostels, I was always clean and tidy. And, you know, I learned basic skills like ironing and washing, and a lot of my friends never knew how to use a washing machine. But I don't know, I'm still a procrastinator. Like, when it comes to having loads of things on my mind and loads of tasks, I get really stressed out, and I just procrastinate. I go, right, I'm gonna go and play Call of Duty, or I'm gonna go and eat some food, or go and cook. I'll do anything to avoid doing that work. Then, like, 2 hours before it's due in, I'm doing it. And I've been at that since I was a kid. I don't think I'll ever change. But, I'm just bad at deadlines, basically.
Well, again,
I never miss a deadline. I'm literally, like, running to it. Just, you know what I mean? Like, just, like, nose over the line at the last second.
Yeah. Oh, again, thank you for sharing that human side. So, in your teenage year, what was your kind of the defining moment? Did you have a moment when you went, you know, now I found my life's purpose or mission?
Not really. I think I always knew I was going to be a teacher. So I went to university to specifically become a PE teacher. But I still was a bit lost. I didn't really commit to it. I didn't have the kind of patience for it. And I worked as a teaching assistant for about a year. And I was like, I can't do this. It's too difficult. It's too stressful. And I thought, I'm not ready. I'm not cut out for this. But then when I finally invested in my personal training qualification, I did a 6-week course and I set up my boot camp. I just felt like that was it. Like, this is what I'm supposed to do. And I actually remember an exact moment. I was cycling to the boot camp in Richmond and it was really hot. It was like 6 a.m. It was super early. It was one of those lovely, like, warm, sunny days where, like, I just felt good. And I remember thinking my legs were burning. Like, they were really hurting. So I was pulling this trailer along with my kit. And I remember thinking, like, this, I said it in my head and even might have said it out loud, that like, this is exactly where I want to be right now. Like, I want to be on this bike, getting fitter. Yeah. Going to a park to help other people get fit. And it was like this moment where I was like, I love this. I'm so right for this. And that was it. I never looked back. And then I just became a body coach.
Omer, one of our students, read that you gained your personal training qualifications at YMCA. What kind of role have organizations like that played on you? And do you think they're adequately supported today?
Yeah, it's good to, obviously, I used to train at a YMCA gym as well, and they have a lot of qualifications and things. And I just think, you know, it's important. I think community is so important. And like, I do miss gyms, because you do have that element of like live classes, and you have, you know, people that are there to cheer you on and to kind of support you if you're having a rough day and stuff. So yeah, you know, the personal training qualification for me was like the start. It's just that little stamp of approval to say, you know, you're qualified, you can get insured, you can now go and train people at their homes or in the park. And it just started off my journey. You know, I learned a lot on that, but obviously after that, that's when I really went to work, having to kind of learn how to do marketing and just brand building as such. Even when you're on your own in a park, you need to learn how to communicate with people. So it was the start of my journey, and I'm really proud that I became a trainer, and I've gone on to help so many people. I think, imagine if I didn't, what would I have done? I might have done something that may not have reached that many people. So it was really a great start to my life, really, when I started the personal training.
Speaking of rough days in your journey, can you give us some stories of your early day trying to run the boot camp in Richmond and how you were handing out flyers at the train station, for example?
So like anything, I got qualified and I didn't want to work in a gym. I wanted to be my own boss and I had no money. I didn't have a van. So I, like I said, I lived in Surbiton and I used to with my dad and I had a trailer on the back of the bike, you know, so I could put my kettlebells and my pads and gloves in there. And I would cycle all the way to Richmond. It was 6 a.m. 4 days a week and I did the evening. So I'd go back and forth twice a day. And I knew in my heart every single morning that when I left that house, there was going to be nobody there because I just didn't have anyone signed up to it. But the thought of someone turning up because they'd had a flyer and I wasn't there killed me. It broke my heart. So I would always be there, you know. And for that whole time, that first year, only one person would turn up in the morning. So she was getting like a personal training session for the price of like a cup of coffee, like £5, whatever it was. But I did it. I didn't resent it because I thought if someone else comes, if she brings her friend, that'll be two people, then it'll be four people. It never really took off that boot camp. I did try my hardest, but I would go flying outside the train station and it was like, I was so embarrassed about it. I didn't want to be there. I didn't want to be in your face at rush hour trying to give you a flyer, but it was all I could do. I couldn't afford radios and magazines and adverts and it couldn't even afford like, you know, a van. I just literally was riding my bike all over town to get there. And it really helped me become confident at speaking with people. It helped me get my message across. And I would give out 100 flyers and one person would email me and come to the bootcamp. And from there, it just built, you know, gradually built. In the end, I gave up the Richmond bootcamp because it never took off. But the one in Surbiton was flying. I had like 20 members every time turn up. Wow. So that was good.
What a transformation. You talk about this idea of a 10-year overnight success. So when you first got onto social media, you started posting like 15-second recipe videos on nutrition and stuff. What was the hardest part about building a brand from ground up?
Well, in the early days when I started Instagram, it was really, it was quite new. You know, there wasn't many people on there. It was like a smaller thing. Now it's even harder. I think if I was to start today all over again in this climate with this Instagram and social media, how it is, I would not have had the reach and the audience that I've got now. It's like I was there at the right time, you know, and I was obsessed. Every day shared a new video. Every day shared a recipe and a workout video. And I applied that principle with the bootcamp. Like I'll just turn up. I just kept going. I didn't give up. And more people would follow me on Instagram. More people started doing my YouTube videos. But it was an 8-year, you know, 8 or 9 year journey just before Pee with Joe. And then it obviously blew up again. But I've worked so hard. Like I can't believe how hard I've worked. And even in this past year, I've worked harder and done more content and workouts than I've ever done. And I'm 35 now. Like I'm 10 years into it. I should be tired, but I'm actually like fully energized for it. I don't know why. I just love it. So I'm, I just think you've got to keep turning up. Never give up.
So hard work is a rather nebulous or relative concept. Were you really Snapchatting in the bath? And have you got any other examples of your hard work and dedication?
I was obsessed. I mean, I was living with my girlfriend at the time and I would film everything. I'd be like, it's breakfast, I'm doing it, and Instagram for lunch and dinner. She would always be like, can we just stop? You know, cause this is long before I had an audience, I was getting paid, I even thought about making money on social media or having book deals. It was just, I just was obsessed with sharing content. I had no idea what I was doing in terms of building a community which I could one day sell a product to. You know, it just wasn't on my mind. But I realized as the audience grew, I had opportunities, you know, with books and with DVDs and with like online products. And it just grew organically over time. It wasn't, you have to believe me, it wasn't like this massive marketing strategy where I just thought, I'm going to cash in on this. This is amazing. It was much more organic. And I think that's why I grew. That's why my content was all free. And it wasn't advertisements. It was just like free recipes and workouts, and this guy's mad, I'm going to follow him. And that is the truth. You know, I think now with social media, my kind of story, it makes people think, well, I can be an Instagrammer and I can get book deals and I can monetize it. And it's coming from a different angle. Whereas before, I was the original kind of, you know, not the original, but maybe the first kind of big mainstream success story who converted like an Instagram following into a proper brand, you know, a proper fitness brand and a cookbook brand.
Mm. So what advice would you give to like a current university student who wants to pursue like a similar career as yours?
I think, you know, the first thing is always be passionate, be purpose driven. So I'm very purpose driven from the start of this whole thing. You know, it's about, can I get people in a park exercising and feeling good and feeling healthier and happier? With YouTube, I thought if I share videos, maybe people in the other parts of the country or the world will do my videos and also feel healthier and happier and come out of it feeling stronger. Same with my recipes and my cookbooks and my DVDs, all so aligned. But everything I do even my partnership with Gusto, like it's trying to get people to cook healthy food at home. And so everything I've done has been stayed true to my purpose from the very first day. And, you know, people will know that I turned down a massive supermarket deal in the UK to do like ready meals. I just couldn't do it. I was like, no, I'm not having that money. I'm not taking that off you. I don't want to do it. I'm going to believe in my mission, which is to get people cooking. And I'm so glad I stuck by that decision. But work hard. I say work hard, have fun and be nice. And work hard means social media. It means digital marketing. It means, you know, community engagement and building trust. And having fun means love. You've got to love what you do. If you don't enjoy it and you're just doing it for the sake of a job or a paycheck, you're never going to succeed in it. You have to truly love and have fun at what you're doing. And then being nice for me is being honest and open and transparent and being kind to people that send you messages or people that reach out to you and want advice. It's not just about what can I get off this person. Like I believe in giving, give before you receive. And that's what's happened with me. I gave out so much content, you know, hundreds of thousands of hours of content and recipes and videos. And then when I launched my books, I had the trust, I had the community and the people that were believing in what I was doing. And that's where the love and the support came from for like my pre-orders of my book and the app. You know, the app was incredible. The app blown the UK app store out of the water. Like no one planned that. No one believed it. No one at Apple believed we were going to do what we did. But because you have to imagine like the love and the gratitude from doing 115 hours of P with Joe, those people then want to take part in my app and my book. So it's about being mission driven and purpose driven. And then you can have amazing opportunities off the back of it, but never go into it with just the idea of I need to capitalize and make money for my audience. Because when you start doing the brand deals, when you start promoting loads of stuff, you lose the attention so quickly. And that is the mistake people make on social media. So build a community, build trust. And if you can, think about building your own products and your own business rather than promoting other people's companies.
What a beautiful message, Joe. So your motto is very succinct. It has three parts of work hard, have fun, and be nice. When was the point in your life when you had two of them, or maybe one of them, but not the third or the second?
I jumped ahead of the gun, didn't I? I preempted one of your questions. I didn't know that. Work hard, have fun, be nice is always been my motto, even from a young age. But I think, you know, when you do those things, like everything seems to cut. I believe in like energy and I believe in manifestation, what you put out in the world. Like the kinder I am on social media, the more positive I am to people and the more loving I am to the world, it comes back to me. It comes back in so many ways. So I think it's so important to be genuine and be honest and be kind to everyone you come into contact with. Because people remember, like when I do a photo shoot or I do an event or something, I make sure I say thank you to every single person on that set, because that means something to people. It means something to the assistant or person bringing in the food, you know, and that's just my energy. That's just my vibe. I've always been like that, really. I don't really think about it. It's just what I want to do.
Well, I mean, thank you, Joe. In terms of your journey, you talk about this idea of persistence and never giving up and building a community and being mission-driven. If we think about like Aristotle and, you know, like the golden mean, like at what point does that perseverance become stubbornness or ambition becomes greed or courage becomes rashness? Like at what point do you have to make pivots and changes in that process and not just go ahead without any idea of what to do?
Oh, he's gone philosophical. He's gone deep for the last bit. Right, let me think. Well, like I said, I am very purpose-driven and I've got real good focus because of that. And I think it's important to have ambition and be hardworking, but also to be present and enjoy your life when you are living it. Because we're constantly, I sometimes feel like I've been on this like hamster wheel of what's next? You know, what can we do now? What country can we go to now? And what's bigger and what's better? And how can I keep growing? And sometimes in that mindset, you forget to enjoy what you've got now and appreciate the moment. And so I'm getting much more conscious of that. I think being aware of that, and you know, I know I've got an expiry date. I'm not going to be cool and fun and relevant forever. So I'm quite aware of that, but I just want to have the best time I can right now while I am. I want to be as kind as I can and reach as many people and work as hard as I can, but also have those abilities to that ability to like disconnect from social media and be with my family and be present and slow down and actually appreciate things. And that's important because otherwise you're just chasing. You're never really happy. I'm content because of what I've got now. I'm content because of the people I help. And I don't know, that's quite deep, but that's just how I feel. And I think we all get to that conclusion eventually that true happiness comes from like giving and being helpful and like giving other people things rather than taking from everyone you can in the world.
So what learning do you think people should take away from the pandemic period?
Oh, there's so many learnings we can take, but the first one I think is the importance of community. And, you know, I've got friends that like don't speak to their family very often, and I'm so close to my family. We speak every other day, or we, you know, we WhatsApp, we FaceTime. And I think it's so important to never lose connection to like your family. And if you've got like a feud or you've had an argument with someone or a friend that you've fallen out of, I think it's so important to like bring those people back into your life, because they were special to you once and they were close to you once, and you can rekindle relationships. You can build relationships and fix certain things that might have gone wrong. And I think that's a really important part of life, you know, having a community around you. And it's so important for connection that we're happy because we have a network that could be, for me, it's like millions of Instagram followers, and it's my friends and it's my family. But for other people, it could be just looking after like your neighbor or your auntie or grandma. Like having a connection to other people is so important. So I think we're all gonna have to wake up to that and realize that it's not about buying the next trainers or getting a private jet to a Vegas. You know, that's all Instagram, that's this Instagram life. But real life is actually family and friends and your kids and your you know, your brothers and sisters and things. And that's the most important thing, to really connect to people and maintain like relationships and communication with them. Because what's it all work? What's the point of it otherwise? What's the point of chasing everything and working so hard in life, but just being on your own without family and friends? I think it's sad to think like that. So yeah, connection and community is the most important thing.
Another great message, Joe. So speaking of the idea of community, and as you mentioned before, how your app came out, and I was so happy 2 days ago when the Body Coach app came out in Australia and New Zealand and I downloaded it. Yay. For our viewers who perhaps haven't downloaded the app yet, can you give like an elevator pitch for why they should join the Body Coach community?
Oh, well, it's not a hard sell here, but I'm really proud of it. I just love it. Like, I'm proud that I've kind of created my own platform with my own energy and my motivation and just kind of put it in your pocket. And it's great. You know, there's recipes, there's amazing workouts, and I do live streams on there, and it tracks your mental health as well. So it asks you questions like, how are you feeling? How's your mood and energy? And so it's not just about workouts, it's more to it. And it's helping a lot of people, it really is. So yeah, if you want to check it out, it's in the App Store. It's not on Android. I mean, a lot of people are moaning at me, but we've built the iOS version. It took 2 years. We are going to do an Android version, but it's not ready yet. So it's only on iOS for iPad and iPhone at the moment.
I'm going to play devil's advocate for a minute here, Joe. I downloaded the app and I was wondering why you didn't have a free trial period. I'm mindful that you got all the free content on YouTube, but I was interested in your reasoning behind the subscription model.
Yeah, no, really interesting. It's something we're literally like working now with Apple, because the information, the stats are that 50% of people that sign up for a 7-day trial, 50% convert to a paying subscriber. So we kind of realized at the early stage that we've got such an engaged super fans, if you like, and they all rushed to it. They all went crazy for the launch offer. So 90% of the revenue was from the upfront annual payment. The moment that offer switched, it's now 90% monthly subscriptions. It's completely switched. So, you know, we've got churn. It's crazy. Like, you lose in so many, but you've got a gain. And it's a whole new beast that we're learning about. But we are actually about to implement a 7-day trial, so that, because we had so many installs, we had hundreds of thousands of installs, but only a certain percentage converted to subscribers. So you know, you're smart. We are bringing out a 7-day trial, and we are going to hopefully convert more people to the subscription.
Fantastic. I think the freemium model is very interesting, and some of the like metrics for the success is like daily active users, retention, etc. Your app right now, what are your key performance indicators?
Well, our North Star of the app is, can we get you to continue and progress through the cycle? So it's not just about a month and getting another £15 off you. It's like, can we get you from beginner to advanced? Because if you go on that journey, you get stronger, fitter, leaner, healthier, and you really adapt the lifestyle by like 6-7 months in. Like, this is your life now. So our North Star metric is, can we get the clients to progress through to the next stage? And obviously that's a challenge, because people's motivation is up and down. Like, it's natural with times of year, with, you know, you might get bored of the workouts, you might want to try something different. There's always something new on the market. So it is a big challenge. Like, the churn rate is really high, but that's really common with a lot of subscription, unless you're Netflix or Amazon Prime. Like, you have to deal with that. It's about now, you know, can we go into new markets and reach new audiences? And so Australia has been a great little spike, and then the US will be another one. But I'm learning a lot about tech and subscription models very fast. Trust me, like, I'm learning every day about it.
Do you have a team doing stuff like A-B testing to see kind of how to optimize or maximize your app?
So we've got an agency. We've got an agency in the UK that built the app. So yeah, we're trying our best to take that in-house because it's well expensive having an agency, but they are really good. They've created a product that, you know, it's 4.8 stars in the App Store with about 5,000 reviews, which is amazing. And it's got like a 99.9% crash rate. Like they've really built a product to scale. But yeah, we're hoping to get, you know, like a CTO and get a proper operations team to start recruiting the developers, because this, you wouldn't believe, like an app looks so simple, but the smallest change takes like 2 week sprint and there's 25 people working on it. It's mind blowing. But yeah, we're at the start, but we're 3 months into the journey and we're already thinking now, you know, about bringing new trainers in and increasing, you know, new features that are going to really retain people and give them more value, I think.
Fantastic, Joe. Well, thank you for being so creative and just so generous with your app and your giving and your free content on YouTube as well. We're approaching the end of the interview and I've just got some rapid fire questions. So I will throw them at you and it will be great if you could just give your gut instinct response.
Go for it.
Best university in the world?
Cambridge University.
Fantastic. Good answer. Greatest athlete ever?
Do you know what? I'm going to say Mark Cavendish, cyclist. He's my hero.
Excellent. I'm a basketball fan. So Michael Jordan, Kobe Bryant or LeBron James?
Yeah. Oh God, I love Jordan. I love their Last Dance. Best thing ever.
What's your most used emoji?
My most used emoji is probably the bicep, the flexing bicep. Come on, workout time.
Awesome. Will there be a body coach emoji?
I've got some stickers on Instagram. If you type in Joe Wicks or body coach, there's like a body coach approved and hit, like, let's do a hit sort of workout. So there's a few on there, but not sure about a GIF, an emoji, sorry.
Most underrated book.
I'm going to say Andre Agassi's book called Open. It's his autobiography. It's like the best autobiography of all time.
That was an amazing book, how he talked about how he got forced by his dad and how he persevered. Do you think if a child, for example, sorry for going for a long question, if they're forced to do stuff and they're very good at it, but they don't enjoy it, should they still continue?
I mean, it's hard to say. Like, look at Michael Jackson, Tiger Woods, Lewis Hamilton, Serena Williams. Like, they've been grinded down by their parents, but they've become the best of the best, right? It's the argument of, like, who knows? They've had an amazing career. You never know how their mental health was when they were younger, but I suppose that the Andre Agassi thing was he hated tennis, and his dad used to bat like thousands of balls a day at him, but he became champion and, you know, world champion, number one ranked tennis player. So I don't know, I'm going to be much more flexible with my children and I'm going to give them as much opportunity to, like, play the guitar, to learn instruments, to do every sport they want. And when they love one and they say, daddy, I want to go back to karate or I want to go back to tennis, that's the one I'll be there cheering them on for. You know, I'm not going to force them into it.
Yep, a holistic education is very appealing. So back to the rapid fire questions. Who is the funniest comedian?
Do you know who I love? I love David Brent in The Office. So Ricky Gervais, the British version of The Office, is like my all-time favourite comedy show. I love it.
Great. What's your hidden talent?
Hidden talent? I'd say I'm not a talented guitarist, but I can play the guitar. So I love playing like John Mayer, like blues guitar stuff. So yeah, I'm into my electric guitars.
Your motto: work hard, have fun, be nice. If you had to add one more, what would that be?
Work hard, have fun, be nice, and rock on.
Fantastic. What's the most impactful act of kindness you've ever given or received?
The most impactful kind of, I think it's just inspiring someone to exercise and who have had like anxiety and depression and suicidal thoughts, like the gift of exercise and just getting that across to someone is, for me, like, it's so powerful and I'm so appreciative. These messages bring me to tears sometimes, but I love reading them as well.
Well, we have talked about education quite a bit and I know you used to do your school tours. You know, often schools have like a board before their assemblies where they put like a message on there. So what is one quote, saying or message you wish every educator would promote and every child would internalize?
Oh, This is so good, but it's also deep. I would say, you know, the most important thing in life is self-belief. And the fastest way to happiness is to help others. There you go. So it's self-belief and helping others.
To be a giver, wonderful message. Joe, have you got any concluding comments before we wrap up?
Firstly, this has been like the most enjoyable interview I've ever had. You're so well researched. You've asked some really great questions. You should definitely be an investigative journalist. And I just hope that anyone that's listening and watching has enjoyed it and feels inspired to, you know, maybe get exercising and eating healthy food and looking after your mental health. It's so important to take your mental health serious this year and look after yourself physically. So lots of love to you all. Enjoy the year and keep smiling.
Well, Joe, thank you very much for your kind words, firstly. And we have covered a lot today. And on behalf of the Cambridge Union and our community, I would just like to thank you sincerely for your time and insights. In fact, when we designed our term cards, Freddie, our fantastic president, hoped to provide something uplifting that is accessible for everyone at home in this most difficult time. And Joe, you have not only done that with this interview, but also throughout this past year. So thank you again for all your positive influence. To our viewers and members worldwide, thank you for your enthusiasm, engagement and support. Please consider following us on YouTube, Instagram, LinkedIn and Facebook, etc. for more exciting events like our upcoming Shakespeare debate and Rory Stewart interview. And above all, in the words of the body coach, Joe Wicks, let's all work hard, have fun and be nice. I'm David Kwan. Thank you again and please stay safe.